Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. And on the phone from the beautiful town of Milwaukee is Monica Omnitsky, Demmer Curator, 20th and 21st Century Design at the Milwaukee Art Museum.
Yeah, mouthful.
Okay,
that's right.
We're doing well. And I came up to see, and you were behind this, a wonderful, wonderful exhibit called Serious Play, Design in Mid-Century America. And it's at the Milwaukee Art Museum through January 6th.
Yes. I'm so glad you had a chance to come see it.
Yeah, 200 pieces roughly, right?
Yeah.
And about 40 designers.
That's right.
That's about right. Okay, let's do 101 and just talk, define mid-century and mid-century design and maybe even mid-century modern. I mean, I don't know if I'm breaking it down too much, but just tell the listeners what mid-century is.
Yeah, so we decided to use the language mid-century because it's something that's accessible and that it's kind of in popular parlance now. The exhibition really looks at architects and designers and their various projects that occur after the war. And so when we say mid-century, we're really talking about the mid-20th century. And so for this exhibition, that is anything, again, after the war, so late 1940s through the mid-60s. That's what we're calling mid-century. And the exhibition isn't really a mid-century design show. I mean, it is because, of course, all the objects fall into that category, but we're using play as a lens through which to view mid-century modern design.
And why did you take that route?
Because I thought it would be more fun, honestly. there have been a lot of shows recently about like monographic design shows. So shows about Charles and Ray Eames, for example, or shows about Alexander Girard. And I wanted to take a different spin. And mid-century design, I mean, you know, you could have thousands of examples as opposed to, you know, just 40 architects and designers. So we had to narrow it down in some way. And I thought play was a really useful way of getting at the problems in the period, mainly because a lot of designers, yeah, they either talked about play, they wrote about play, they used play in their practice. So it seemed like a really good way of getting at, a good way of kind of organizing the exhibition.
What did you learn about post-war America and how it affected not only the design but the attitude? I mean, and
yeah.
Materials and how did this take a turn after the war was over?
Yeah, so that is a great question because one of the areas that we kind of explore, so the show is structured into three categories, the American home, child's play, and corporate approaches. And I think to answer your question, we can look at the American home as a really great example to show how things have really changed. So in America, after the war, there is a booming kind of post-war economy. And what happens is that people have more money and they have more time. And so how do people choose to use that extra, you know, their extra dollars and their extra time? Well, one of the ways that they choose to do so is they begin acquiring more things. And this became a kind of point of fascination for me, particularly looking at something called the storage wall, which, you know, we would like in, you know, you can call it like bookshelves or a storage unit. Essentially, it's like shelves for you to put your stuff in, right? Whether the stuff is like records or books or objects that you've picked up on your travels around the world, because again, you have more money and you have more time. So the storage wall became a kind of real point of fascination for me. And I started noticing that, oh, it wasn't just like Charles and Ray Eames and George Nelson, who again were kind of major architect designers in the period, who were making these. It really was from the high, it kind of went from high to low, and I started finding, you know, storage wall knockoffs in kind of mass market magazines. So this really kind of permeated into everyday America, not just in the homes of architects. So I think that was one of the ways that that we can see the post-war I have already forgotten how you phrased the question, but I think that answers it relatively well.
There's a fantastic, I want to ask you about the pop-up store, but there's a fantastic catalog that 244 pages published by Yale University Press. And in the catalog, you write, maybe you can just elaborate, I'm picking up on what you just said, you write how the home has often functioned as a showcase for culture. I mean, that's... talk about that and talk about what it did in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, you actually read it. That's thank
well,
you.
Well, about 60 to 70%. Great. Yeah. But there's a lot of great pictures in there too. So yeah.
So it was a showcase for culture. What I mean by that is that people, I believe, and I'm not the only one. I mean, there are a lot of historians who have written about this as well. One of the ways to define yourself, one of the ways that we kind of create identity is through the objects that surround us. And so, I think the claim that I'm making here with the storage wall and with various other things like the whimsical product design that we have in that first kind of American home section, that if you are choosing to buy something like Irving Harper's ball clock that was made for, while he was at George Nelson for the Howard Miller Clock Company. If you are choosing to buy something like that, and it's a pretty progressive avant-garde design, if you're buying that over something that is more conventional, then you're making a statement about yourself and who you are. And again, this is not new information. It's just in this exhibition, we're highlighting the types of objects that were present in the period and that really had a kind of playful element. And those clocks are a good kind of illustration of that and a way to kind of bring this new culture into your home.
We're going to take a break and about who you are. I want to ask a little bit about your background and what you brought into this and your roots in Chicago. So you can hang on with us a little bit longer, right?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so don't go away as we talk about Serious Play, Design in Mid-Century America. It's up at the Milwaukee Art Museum through January 6th up there in Milwaukee. I want to take a break, but that's a great place to have it. I mean, the architecture at the museum and stuff, it really fits your facility really well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, for those listeners who have been to the Milwaukee Art Museum before, the exhibition is held in the Calatrava building. So that's the 2001 third building of the museum. But I think we've done something rather different in the exhibition gallery. The exhibition design, the layout, it's really quite fun and supports the thesis and the feeling of the exhibition.
Okay, don't go away. We'll be back with more on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720, and we're with Monica Mnitsky from the Milwaukee Art Museum. And are you the curator or co-curator of Serious Play, Design in Mid-Century America?
I am the co-curator, so I curated this exhibition with Darren Alfred, who's the curator of architecture and design at the Denver Art Museum, which is where the exhibition will travel to in 2019.
For our listeners out in Denver, we're heard in 38 states.
There we go.
They can probably hear us. Before Milwaukee, you were at the Art Institute of Chicago. Just talk a little about your roots in Chicago.
Sure. I'm a hometown gal. I was actually born and raised there. Went to college there. I went to Loyola. And then after college, I went to graduate school out in New York. I lived in New York, lived and worked in New York for a few years. And then I always like to tell this story because my husband did not like living in New York. He really loved, and he's from Chicago as well, so he really kind of drove the move back, and I was happy to move back as well. So we moved back in the late 2000s, and I started working at the Art Institute in 2007. And left there when Milwaukee came a calling in 2015.
Was there what your folks do? I mean, what kind of line, tell a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm the child of immigrants. So my father actually does real estate, and my mother is a hairdresser.
So what I'm where I'm going with that is, as you worked on this, were there memories like that, that triggered in your mind about growing up, you know, maybe with grandparents or your parents or certain things you saw or, you know?
Oh, God, no. I mean, my upbringing had nothing to do with this material at all.
Really?
Yeah, no, I mean, I did grow up in a ranch house, but it was like a 70s ranch, so it was not not mid-century at all. But I wrote my dissertation on the work of Alexander Girard, which is really why I wanted to do this exhibition, because, again, I didn't want to do anything that was like monographic in scope because that had already been done. And I had this, you know, vast kind of knowledge of the mid-century, and I wanted to apply it in some way. So that's the kind of origin point of the exhibition. It kind of has nothing to do with my upbringing.
Why do you think there is new interest in it? I was telling you during the break, I mean, I bought a little mid-century in 1952 out in Westchester, Illinois. and I go shopping for stuff. And you know, I mean, you touched on this before. I mean, even Target now has a Project 62 kind of mid-century line, and West Elm has the Sputnik lamps. Why is this all coming back?
I mean, you know, I'm a historian, so like, you can see like cycles, right? Yeah. So I think everything will come back at a certain point. But I also believe that I don't think mid-century, you know, mid-century, the kind of mania toward mid-century has been around for a while. I think longer than people remember. You know, so we're in 2018 now. Dwell Magazine has been around since 2000. And I really think about them as being the kind of starting, you know, one of the kind of early voices in this, like, resurgence of mid-century modern. I mean, the fact that, like, West Elm, you know, has been carrying mid-century type pieces for the last few years is like just a you know, like just the fact that like it takes a while for larger corporations to kind of get hip to it.
How maybe we could touch on some highlights of the exhibit, but how functional is some of it? Was so playful, I just wonder how functional it is. And I got two items I want to bring up: the red marshmallow sofa. And okay. The woman and man bench. I mean, those things are great, but the marshmallow sofa.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could really describe the marshmallow sofa and how you would really sit in it.
Yeah, so the marshmallow sofa is really, I mean, if we're talking about icons of design, icons of mid-century design, like, this is it, right? And for the listeners that aren't aware of it, Google it, I'll try to describe it. Irving Harper designed this, Herman Miller produced it. It is literally, I mean, they look like, they're circular discs that are attached to a steel frame,
yeah.
And they don't come together, so there are gaps between the circles, and it's really, I mean, it's like a piece of sculpture is what it is.
Yeah, right.
The story is that there was a Long Island plastics manufacturer that went to George Nelson and said, like, oh, hey, I've got this new machine that can punch these plastic discs out of a certain shape. Is this something that you could work with? And so Nelson's office had a bunch of designers, and Irving Harper was one of those designers who started working on this project. And they came up with this marshmallow sofa, and they were like, okay, great. We're going to be able to pump these things out. Herman Miller will manufacture them. It'll be cheap. It'll be, I mean, cheapish, but it'll be something that we can mass produce in a real way, and we can bring kind of, you know, this is this idea of bringing good design to the masses. Well, of course, this never happens because the plastics manufacturer kind of overpromised a little bit. So actually, all of those circular discs are handmade, which means that Herman Miller was only able to produce, I forget the figure, but it's like 211 or something like that. I mean, it's really like a teeny tiny amount. It was only in production for a few years. And so it has become an icon because of that, because there were, you know, because of the rarity of the thing. But you know, in that sense, it's kind of like a failed design from that perspective. Mm-hmm. But your question about like functionality, you know, there is a great advertisement of a woman laying on the sofa, and she's in this like super elegant dress. She actually worked at the Herman Miller showroom, so this is how they got her to, you know, be part of this advertisement. But you know, she makes it seem comfortable-ish, but I have never actually, they're still being produced by Vitra, so you can actually sit in one that is in current production. I don't think they're very comfortable.
A couple more things, and I'll let you run. Talk about the Midwest influence. I mean, Herman Miller, I mean, the whole Western Michigan thing, and of course, Chicago. Talk about the Midwestern influence on this design.
Yeah, well, we didn't try to be Midwestern focused, although as I being from the Midwest, I always I'm a big booster of the Midwest. But you know, it just so happened that Michigan and Grand Rapids in particular was the furniture capital of the United States in the 19th century. So there's a reason why Herman Miller comes out of that. It's because they, they're there, and there's a long-standing history of furniture, but not of modern design. So what's interesting with Herman Miller, and I should say that it's Herman Miller and Knoll that are the two big mid-century American manufacturers, I would say. And Knoll, of course, is East Coast, and Herman Miller is Western Michigan.
And Zealand, Herman Miller, he's from like the he was
Zealand,
from Zealand,
yep, right? Zealand,
Dutch,
exactly.
Dutch people,
yeah,
Dutch stock.
Yeah. Very good Dutch stock. And what's interesting about Herman Miller, I think, is that, like, so they had a choice in the 1930s. They could have been making furniture like everyone else in and around Zealand and kind of up and down that coast in Michigan. And the furniture that most people were making was not modern. It was like revival stuff. And Herman Miller, the owner, DJ Dupree, was kind of given a choice by this New York designer, Gilbert Rohde, who said, you know, if you kind of want to like join us in this century, and this is the early 1930s, you will want to try what people are doing in Europe and what some other designers are suggesting, and that is like modern furniture. And Herman Miller took a big gamble, and it paid off. And they have been like at the forefront for basically ever since then.
How's it gone? I mean, it goes up through January 6th, but what's the response been?
Yeah, honestly, people have been so people with children love it because they come in. We have three play spaces in the exhibition, and then we also have a piece of play sculpture in the public part of the museum in the Wendover Hall, that Calatrava building. And so the feedback that I've gotten from people with families is like, oh my God, I've got to drag my kid away from the tops or the Ting toy play area. This is a kind of area where you can construct your own toys. So that has been really good. The kind of nostalgia of mid-century is real with people of a different kind of demographic, right? So older folks are telling me how much fun it is to see these works in this context, and also to kind of problematize some of them, right? Because it's not just like a super celebratory thing, that you're not just saying like, oh, this is a cool design, but it's really like within the context of something greater. So that's been good. And you know, for people kind of my generation, who again are part of this like this resurgence of mid-century that you were alluding to, Dave, like that it's hip again. You know, there are a lot of these mid-century shops around town, and there are people who are coming by and checking it out and saying like, oh, the museum. I thought it was just all like, I don't want to say like stuffy, boring paintings, but like, you know, as a design curator, I like to hear it when people say, oh, there's more to the museum than just like paintings. And that's something that was one of my goals, was to kind of, to expose people to other kind of segments within the art museum.
And for the holidays, there's a great pop-up store in the museum. You get like mid-century stuff. Just talking. I mean, that's right.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Did you buy other things?
Yeah, I wanted to. Yeah, I got a few things. Yeah.
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 So
what? No, what's in there? Yeah.
The shop has also been kind of doing gangbusters, from what I understand, because they did a really good job of buying not only some of the works that you can find in the exhibition are then sold in the gift shop, but then also there's a contemporary kind of angle. So contemporary designers that are looking back at the mid-century, so that's really cool. So anything from like books to scarves to tableware, a lot of kids stuff. For obvious reasons also. But there's a really nice range of objects, but also price points. So there's super inexpensive things, and then like really nice holiday type gifts.
Fantastic. You make me want to come back before
January. Well, you should. January 6th. Yeah.
So Monica Bnitsky, I wouldn't be doing my job. Demmer Curator, 20th and 21st Century. What is a Demmer Curator? What is that? What
does that mean? So I am very generously sponsored by a group called the Demmer Charitable Trust,
okay.
And they are in town, and they support design at the Milwaukee Art Museum.
Okay.
So we are very thankful to them.
That's how that works. Okay.
Yep.
And the information, it's the Milwaukee Art Museum. It's 700 North Art Museum Drive, which is right there on the lake, correct?
That's right.
Parking's a breeze.
Easy parking.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, right there. And it's mam.org?
Yep.
Am I missing anything? Closed on Monday.
So.
Closed
Come.
On Monday, right?
Closed on Monday, you're right.
Yeah.
But we, lots of activities. Closes January 6th. There are three spaces to eat at the museum, is bananas. Two gift shops. You should come.
You're the best. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Monica.